This is the Perth Asian Lawyer Podcast with Raymond Tan. Episode 1, Family Law.
Good evening. This is Raymond Tan, the principal of 10 and 10 Lawyers, which is a law firm based in Perth, Western Australia. I'd like to welcome you to my first podcast. And if you have any questions about the law, please do visit us at www.10and10lawyers.com. We do have a free email legal advice service, and if you have a query, I would suggest you just email it to us so that we can try and answer your question as soon as possible. Today's topic deals with the issue of family law and what happens when you go through a separation. Unfortunately, in the course of my work, I do see clients at least 3 to 4 times a week, and I have to go through this process explaining to them what they are looking at if they are going through a separation. And what I usually tell them is that if you are separated, there's 4 main things that you need to consider. Firstly, a divorce. Secondly, property settlement. Third, custody. And fourth, what to do about child support. Let's deal with the first matter, a divorce. By law, you can only be divorced if you have been separated for at least 12 months. And all you need to do is to file a Form 3. And within 3 to 4 months, if you are able to show that the separation has been for 12 months and you have no issues regarding how the children are being looked after, then a divorce is usually granted without any questions. Now, the second matter that you need to consider is property, and that is the bulk of what I'll be discussing today. Let's just go to the third matter, which is custody. As far as custody is concerned, the court is only concerned about what is in the best interest of the child. The current outlook by the court is that both parents, should spend as much time as possible with the children. I would suggest that the topic of care and custody, or the care arrangement for the children, should be left to another podcast another day. The fourth question is the question of child support. Now, this is dealt with by the child support agency. And what the child support agency does is they will calculate the income of the spouse who does not have the care of the child, of the children. And they also take into consideration the income of the parent who has the care or full-time care of the child or children. They then do a calculation. An assessment is then done, which can be challenged if the spouse who is paying the child support disagrees with it. Again, I would suggest that another podcast will have to be done to deal with this issue of child support. Now, for today's purposes, we're more interested in what happens when you go through a separation. I suggest that the first thing that the lawyer should be doing when they see you is to sit down and to go through all the assets that you have. For example, your superannuation value, house value, your car, etc. And then they should take away whatever liabilities you have. The liabilities would include what mortgage you have, whether you owe any monies to any relatives, so that they can arrive at a net figure. Now, until you arrive at a net figure, a lawyer is very unlikely to be able to help you to resolve your matter. And hence, we come to the first problem when it comes to the issue of property settlement. And that problem is that sometimes you have parties disagreeing on the value of an asset. So, for example, if you say that your husband's business, which is a plumbing business and has been in operation for the last 10 years, if you say that his business is worth $200,000 and he says, no, the business is worth nothing, then you have a dispute
regarding a value which is about $200,000, and that could vastly impact on how the court is going to resolve your settlement fairly. Another issue that could arise is if there is a dispute regarding the liabilities of the parties. And in this case, sometimes you have Asian families where they have borrowed monies from an uncle or an auntie, and there's a dispute as to whether those funds are actually borrowed at all, because sometimes the other spouse doesn't know that monies are being loaned. Now, once you are able to ascertain what the net asset of the parties are, then in most cases where the parties have come into the marriage with nothing and they have accumulated assets together, the court is more likely to say that the assets should be split 50-50. However, the court also needs to consider what we call the Section 75 two factors under the Family Law Act. And what that means is that if, for example, the husband is earning a high income, he's going to be able to take his 50% and put that on a down payment to go and buy a house. Whereas if the wife is unemployed because she's looking after young children, she will not be able to go and borrow monies, and she'll be dipping into the funds that is being distributed. Hence, the court will say that perhaps it would be fairer to give the wife an additional 10 or 15%. That is if the contributions of the parties are equal. If the contributions are not equal, for example, if a husband came into the marriage and he put in $50,000 when they commenced the marriage and he used that $50,000 to go and buy a $400,000 house, and the parties subsequently separate, then of course it is unlikely that the court would suggest that the contributions would be equal. And what the court would probably do is to remove that initial contribution from the husband and give it to him, and then whatever increase has been found in the net value of the assets would then be distributed equally. There are different ways and formulas of dealing with an unequal contribution. However, my suggestion to my clients is that do not listen to your friends who say that they have been or they were given 70 or 80% of the net assets, because each case is different. So the next question is, what do you do after or assuming that you have reached an agreement with your husband or your wife regarding the split of the family assets? Now, there is in the family court a form called the Form 11, which is a sort of a consent order. That document is a court document which is prepared only if both parties have agreed to resolve their property settlement issues. And the form outlines what assets the parties have, how they've agreed to split it up, and then that document is filed with the family court after it's been signed by both parties in front of their lawyers. Now, you need to have your spouse sign it in front of an independent lawyer, because you do not want your spouse to turn around later and say that they were coerced into signing that document. The cost of a Form 11 is about $2,500 to $3,000, and the timing to resolve or finalize the Form 11 could take any time from 3 days to 3 months to 6 months, depending on how committed the partner is into resolving your property settlement issues. Now, I repeat, you do not get your lawyers to go and prepare such a document unless you know for sure that your spouse is going to sign the document. Now, why do you need a Form 11? There's two main reasons. When you file the Form 11 and it's been signed by both parties and filed with the court will give you a final court order. What is the effect of the court order? Well, when you get that court order, that means that if there is a property that is to be transferred from one party to the other, for example, if the house is worth $500,000 and the wife has agreed to transfer the house to the husband, his half share will be worth $250,000. The stamp duty on that half share, if there was no court order, will be about $3,000 to $4,000. Now, if there is a family court order under the law, the stamp duty is reduced to $20, which is a very substantial saving. But the more important reason why you need a final court order is because if you do not have a final court order and you, for example, sell the house and distribute it between the parties, the husband takes $50,000 and he goes and blows it at a casino, the wife takes $50,000 and she uses it to buy a new investment property, and the investment property goes up in value. Under the law, if there has not been a final court order from the family court, the husband can turn around and say, "Look, darling, I never received my property settlement. I have lost my money. I still have an interest in that investment property that you have." Hence, for two main reasons, a final consent or court order is very important to resolve your family matter, because you are able to reduce your stamp duty liabilities, and also it finalizes matters. Now, what happens if you cannot get your spouse to agree to a Form 11? Well, then the next option is to file what we call a Form 1. A Form 1 is an application in the family court that states exactly what you own, what liabilities you have, and it tells the court, "Mr. Judge, this is what I want. I want the house to be transferred to myself. I want the husband to take care of this mortgage, etc." Now, that form is given to your husband or your spouse together with a Form 13, which is a form that states what financial assets you have, so that the court knows what they are talking about or what you are talking about. When that document is served on your husband or your wife, the spouse then files a responding Form 1A setting out what are the orders that they agree with and what they do not agree with. So inevitably, the spouse will say, "No, I don't agree with what my wife or husband is seeking. Instead of giving $50,000 to the spouse, I only want to give the spouse $10,000 as an example. So by that time, the court knows what the husband wants, and the court knows what the wife wants. The matter is then set for a case assessment conference, which will take about 3 to 6 weeks from the date that the application is first filed. Now, nothing much happens at a case assessment conference other than the court making sure that all documents that are necessary have been filed. And if they have been filed, then the court will say, "We will set the matter down for a conciliation conference." A conciliation conference usually takes place about 5 to 6 weeks after the case assessment conference. Question: what is a conciliation conference? Well, a conciliation conference is a meeting held between the parties with their lawyers in front of a court-appointed mediator. This mediator's job is not to finalize matters unless it's by agreement. That mediator cannot make decisions regarding how your assets are to be distributed. However, the mediator, being an experienced person as far as family law is concerned, is able to suggest to the parties that perhaps, for example, if the husband is saying, "I do not want to give any money to the wife because she did not earn any money at all," the mediator may be able to tell the husband, "Look, that is not what the law is about. Although the wife did not earn any income, she is still entitled to the assets or part of the assets." So the mediator's job is to try and persuade the parties to settle the matter. If the parties agree at the mediation or the conciliation conference, then a court order is prepared, signed by the parties, and it becomes a final court order as if you have been to a hearing. And that will conclude the matter, and you will be entitled to the stamp duty and the final conclusion, so that nobody can turn around and say later that they have not had their property settlement. just like when a Form 11 is signed, as discussed earlier. Now, I would say that 60% of cases settle at the conciliation conference. The cost to that date would be about $3,000 to $4,000. What happens if the matter does not settle at the conciliation conference? Well, the mediator would then set the matter down for what we call a pretrial conference. What is a pretrial conference? Well, it is another conference, but the difference is by the time the pretrial conference is set down and heard, the court would make several orders, including an order that whatever evidence that you're going to be using in the trial before a judge, that evidence is to be put down in writing, which means that the lawyer has to spend time preparing whatever documents is necessary in an affidavit form from any witness that they believe will be necessary to go to trial before the judge. That is a very expensive affair because you may need to get a lawyer to prepare the witness statements for 5 or 6 different witnesses, and all that is going to cost time and money. Now, the reason why the court has made such an order is because when they go for the pre-trial conference, they want to be sure of what evidence each party is going to be bringing before the judge. So, as I discussed earlier, if there was a dispute about funds owed to Uncle Sam, by that time, Uncle Sam should have filed a sworn statement confirming that the funds were loaned to the parties. Uncle Sam, by that time, should logically have obtained evidence to confirm that those funds were given to the parties. And if that is the case, that helps the parties to understand what the issues are, because they know exactly what each witness is going to say. I would say that 80% of cases do settle at the pretrial conference stage because by that time the issues are very clear. What happens if you cannot settle at the pretrial conference stage? Well, the matter is then set down for a hearing before a judge, and you do not want to go and appear before a judge because it is very expensive. The cost to appoint a counsel to act for you in the trial is about $3,000 per day, and it includes the preparation cost. So by the time you have reached the pre-trial conference, you may have spent another $4,000 to $5,000 or more. And if it still does not settle at the pre-trial conference stage, you then need to prepare to go and see a judge for the judge to make a final decision. So by the time you have a final trial before a judge, you may have spent up to $40,000 to $50,000 at the very minimum. Hence, we go back to the question as to what we should be doing when we decide whether to settle the matter out of court. As I said earlier, if you find that the net asset value is $200,000, then 10% is $20,000. If the net asset value is $2 million, 10% is $200,000. Surely, you should be able to see right now that sometimes it may not be logical to proceed all the way to see a judge because the cost of seeing a judge exceeds what you are hoping that you can get from your spouse. Hence, I always believe that when you see a lawyer for family law advice, you need to be very certain that the lawyer that you're appointing to look after your interests is there to look after your interests and not there to line his or her own pocket. Because there's nothing worse than a lawyer who feeds on your anger and your emotion and tells you your spouse is being unreasonable, your spouse is being a real pain in the neck, therefore let's go to trial and try and get as much as possible. At the end of the day, you need to look at the bottom dollar to ask yourself whether it's reasonable to proceed to trial. Now, if you have any questions after listening to this podcast, feel free to contact Raymond Tan, myself, at tanandtanlawyers.com. And remember, we're there to protect your interests and to save you money.